So let's start with the lecture verse. The unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Though we can see and hear it, we can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. So today I'm going to talk about a phrase that came from a religious experience in the 1600s of a Zen monk called Bankei. And he said, well, actually, he was quite ill. He had been doing a severe ascetic practice, and he was dying. And all of a sudden, he coughed up this huge black phlegm and went, ah, I get it. All is perfectly resolved within the unborn. And he lived, and he taught for the rest of his life. And he included in his teaching that we don't need to be ascetic, we just need to resolve, perfect, let things perfectly resolve within the unborn. So this is what I'm going to talk about today. And he spent his whole life talking about it. So I'm doing a little Dharma talk. So you're going to get a synopsis in a sense. But I've been training with this. All is perfectly resolved within the unborn for a long time. So it's definitely had a part of my life. So when I looked up the word resolve, this was very interesting. What came up were the first three definitions of resolve is to loosen, to release, to melt. And then it had paragraph that continued quite long about all these other definitions. But I stopped right there because that's what I'm talking about spiritually. That's what I believe resolve means spiritually. To loosen, to release, to melt. This is how all is perfectly resolved within the unborn. As we all know, there are things within our life that are unresolved for us. And I have to say, I often thought, oh, I need the other person or I need the condition to be different for there to be resolution. But actually, that is not true. That you can resolve what hooks you with the unborn and you can become free and the karma can become free. So that's part of what I'm talking about. You know, these things can be as minor as where we've got a job and there's a coworker we just can't get along with. And if we try to resolve that within our situation, within ourselves, or we could I sound like I'm echoing. Am I echoing to all of you? You can all hear me. Okay, so it's just my hearing aids. Okay. you know, the things that need resolving that we're hooked on could be something as simple as childhood karma, childhood trauma, child abuse, adult abuse, teenage abuse, all kinds of things that happen to us that kind of we're still carrying around years after they happen. There's still a big deal for us. It can be a divorce. It can be the loss of someone we love. It's any action that is unresolved for us, any action that we're hooked on. It can be political. It can be injustice. And in addition, unresolved karma from past lives of other beings my understanding is that we pick up on our way into a new life things that are unresolved, that are good for us to help cleanse, good for us to keep learning. And not only from the past, but from our current life, these things literally become filters that affect the way we see life. And I have some very blue filters in my karmic stream. A lot of sadness, a lot of feelings of things, hurts. And, you know, we know if five people see an accident, you get five different views of what's going on. So we all have our ways of seeing things, and those impact us. But none of that really matters. What matters is us and our relationship to it, how we bring it to the unborn. From my own observations in meditation, and other people mentioning it to me, I see that I'm a very fearful person. A lot of fear arises. And I think I have a fear from the time I was a little kid of being shunned by others, of being othered. You know, we don't want you here. Happened a couple of times in my life. And concurrently with that, I also have a really strong tendency to try and please people, to make them happy. And I think that's also interesting, relates to my fear and safety, the needs. So these are the things that I am aware of I have. Now, in the Buddha's last teaching, which is one of my favorite scriptures, right at the very end, when he's talking to the Sangha as he's dying, it's just a great scripture. I encourage everybody to read it. I'm quoting Reverend Master Hubert's translation from Buddhist writings. He says, I'm trying to see where I'm supposed to start. With the clarity of your discriminative wisdom and insight, eradicate the darkness of the delusion, for the world is truly susceptible to fear and mistrust and wants strength and stability. Now, I could keep reading. He has many good things to say, but I'm not. This pertains directly to what I'm talking about. That, yes, do we not know? We all want things to be stable. We all want things to not be to be safe. We all share that. This is kind of like our DNA that we all share. And the world, in case anybody hadn't noticed, it's not like that. You know, Rinpoche Master Khotun said once in a Dharma talk, "Oh, people build their houses in the middle of a river and wonder why it washes away." And of course, you know, you laugh and say, oh yeah, right. But we do. We actually build houses in the paths of hurricanes. We build houses on earthquake faults. We build monasteries near volcanoes. You know, there is no way, there's no place in this world that is not safe. There is no place that is safe, is what I'm trying to say. There's no safety in one sense. True safety is findable, and that's what resolution in the unborn is about. But I'm going to come back to that. So it's important to see our own resistance, because it is our resistance that then we get to resolve, release, melt. So I'm speaking to the converted, to the choir, so to speak, but we all know the benefit of meditation. We know that meditation, I mean, you sit down to meditate and you look at your mind, you go, oh my God, You know, and sometimes you look at your mind, you go, oh my God. You know, so it's all right. That's what meditation is. But there is something really important in that seeing what's going on in our mind, because that's the area of where I learned that I began to see how afraid I was. So you can't do something about it if you don't look. So looking is a really important aspect of what we do, and being still. Dogen, who was in the 12th century Zen master, part of our lineage, Dogen said, always we must be disturbed by the truth. I find that very helpful, because it's okay. We can handle this. We can be disturbed by what we did in the past. We can be disturbed by that thought. We should be disturbed. It's actually helpful. We can't do anything about it unless we are disturbed. So it's just very, very important. And additionally, you know, we have Jukai coming up, but the taking of the precepts, the studying the precepts are really an integral part of our meditation practice, because that is where the guidance for that disturbance can follow. We can look to the precepts and say, well, why did I say that? What am I doing? And then we see, oh, well, I was saying something that wasn't true, or I was disparaging another person. Oh, that's causing suffering. And so this talk is really about how meditation and precepts help us resolve, let go of the things and the transformations that occur. You know, for me personally, the last 6 months of my life thus far, this recent, it's been a very humbling 6 months. I've actually had a really difficult time because I fell. I have a heart condition which was exacerbated by the fall. It just was really a dark and difficult time. And we go through dark and difficult times at times. And there's kind of a relearning or a re-seeing of the things we know well about ourselves. I have said to several people that I feel like I'm a bad dog on a short leash, and that leash is constantly tight, and I'm supposed to not keep pulling on it. You would understand this. So anyway, so how do you resolve things with the unborn? You know, I've often thought of resolution as, well, it's me and the other person, or it's me and changing the conditions, and that's how you get the result. But how do you resolve with the unborn, which is this indescribable, compassionate, loving, wise force? You know, and honestly, some people fire that force. Some people get so hurt or so mad, they say, that's it, you know. You took away my favorite 17-year-old son. I will never speak to you again. And that's not the way to resolve, as we know. But the unborn is very patient and waits for us. One of the laws of the universe is that the world is not answerable. The universe is not answerable to my personal will. I find that a really helpful law, because we bump into that a lot. We want conditions to be different, but actually they aren't. It's not up to us to make conditions different. It's up to us to make ourselves different. If you notice me saying this a lot, I'm saying this because we all do this, myself included. Immediately our first reaction is, oh, it's the problem of the condition or the person, which is a condition. And instead, actually, it's not. And it's freeing to all of a sudden go, oh, well, what's my part in it? What can I do about it? It isn't about fixing. Some of us are terrible, have a strong drive to fix. And it's not. It's not about fixing. Those of us who are laughing know, yeah, oh yeah, that's me. You know, so one of the things I find about fixing is that it's helpful to say, how may I help, rather than let's make this different. It's how may I help? How will you help me let go of my selfishness? Will you help me to see where I'm, what my role is in this? And that's actually very helpful. It's not the unborn that needs improving or changing. It's us. That's why we're all here. So, and it's in our minds, our views, which are in our minds, our actions, you know. And it's our work. And we just sit up straight in front of the Buddhas and ancestors and get to work. And with that in mind, part of that work is not to judge. Because what this work really does is it makes us learn to love ourselves, to have compassion. If we've got to deal with these unresolvable things, we have to be a friend to ourselves. You cannot force yourself to be different. It's about being compassionate to yourself and seeing, oh, I'm really vulnerable to this. Oh, I do this. And when we do that, then we can be really compassionate to other people. Oh, you know, so there's a lot of oh moments in training. Oh, oh, yes, yes. So a really important part of this resolving part is to look at our intentions. I remember before I became a Buddhist, so it's in my mid-20s and I was kind of reeling out of, getting out of childhood, a teenagehood, college, that was the 60s, everything was chaotic, and boy, it was a tough time, and I can remember I got together with this man, and he actually became my husband, but I brought him to meet my sister, and she didn't like him. She and her husband, they didn't like him, and I was so hurt. And that began a long history between us of estrangement. And when I look back on it, I thought, well, what were my intentions? And I thought about it, and I thought, well, I didn't really have any intention except I wanted them to like it. And that's not a good intention. I could have had, and this was very helpful to see, I could have had the intention of, how may I bring more harmony and peace into my family, which was in dire need of it, you know, really could have helped. And how different that would have been if I had walked in with that attitude. So looking at our intentions is really helpful. We can see, oh, I could have shifted that. You know, the truth of the matter is I was scared of my sister. She was a very volatile and 8 years older than me. And because I was afraid, I didn't do anything except step back. Now, I'm going to switch the subject and I'm going to do something which I never do. I'm going to tell you about a dream I had. And we all have dreams, and we all talk about dreams, and it's not fun to listen to other people's dreams, usually. But this is a good dream, and I think this dream applies to all of us. And if I'm wrong, you can tell me that was stupid. You shouldn't have told us that dream. But when I first moved here, so I'd been a Buddhist for about half my life, and 20 years, 25 years, something like that. And I was here to become a monk. So I was living as a lay resident. And I had this dream. And you should know I'm terrified of grizzly bears. And in this dream was a grizzly bear, and it was in a cage, and it was trying to break out. And I knew that the grizzly bear wanted to kill me. So I went up to the cage as it was trying to break out, and I said, why do you want to kill me? I didn't put you in the cage. And the grizzly bear said, no, but you left me there. I went, oh. And then I started running away, and of course the bear got out and started running after me. This is a dream, right? This is always what happens. And I get to this dead end, of course, always in a dream, we're in this dead end, there's no place to escape. And the grizzly bear is standing in front of me, and I have to turn around and face it. And the grizzly bear is standing there, and his or her arms are flinging around with long claws and mouths wide open, snapping, ready to bite me and take my head off. And I turn around and I say, well, if this bear is going to kill me, I better love it. So I just offered loving kindness to it, and the bear embraced me. So that's a dream for all of us, okay? It's all of our dream, but it's that very act of, and don't ask me how I knew that, except that I think I was being told, that's what I have to do. I have to keep turning around and loving the thing I'm afraid of. So I've been living the rest of my time here trying to follow that. And believe me, we forget it. We, in the moment, it's hard to do those things, but that's the teaching. Yes, we have to turn towards the very thing. That's part of the release, really. That's part of it melting, is that it can go home, like us. I think I want to end this talk with a story about Swami Radha, who, before she was Swami Radha, was Sylvia, whatever her last name was. She was a young woman, and she went to India in 1956 and became a disciple of Swami Sivananda, and he was her guru. But at this time, she was still a young woman, a very unusual young woman, no question. It was before World War II had started, and she saw a Buddha statue in an antique store, and she didn't have the money to be able to buy it, but she was drawn to that statue. So she would go by that store and just stand by the window and look at that statue for the longest time. And that statue imprinted in her mind. And very deeply. And one day, you know, she was in a strange, what she said is she was in a strange frame of mind, and she looked up at the sky and the Buddha statue appeared there. Now we're going to fast forward to World War II, and Swami Radha's husband had died in a concentration camp because he was trying to create passports for Jews that were trying to leave Germany. So she was a widow. She was all alone. The war was changing. It was going in the direction of the Allies, and they were beginning to bomb Germany, and there were fires and starving, and it was tough. And she was on her way to a bomb shelter. You know, you can imagine the sirens are going, and you don't have any food, and you're going to be going underground, and it's scary. And she was very scared. I'm going to read from her book, which is called In the Company of the Wise, Remembering My Teachers and Reflecting the Light. Anyway, she said, in the most intense moments when fear really gripped my heart, an image of the Buddha seemed to come from nowhere, took on a life of its own, and floated in front of me even while I was moving about. Then the Buddha grew to the size of a 4-story house. I had a natural response to move underneath his huge protective form. And there I felt peaceful and secure. After that first experience, I intentionally placed myself in the lotus posture and aligned my spine with the Buddha. Then something extraordinary occurred, difficult to describe except to say that I seemed to disappear into the body of the Buddha. So she had that experience more than once, and that was, in a sense, the way she got through those very difficult times. So I find that this is a visual image, but this is what we're doing when we do our daily practice. When we meditate, we are bringing ourselves in alignment and allowing the things we are afraid of, the things we are hooked on, to move. We're allowing them to go home. It's like we're working in a furnace and we're putting our stuff in and it's melting. And we're done with it. We don't have to carry it around anymore. We don't have to go for years going the same thing over and over again. It's really this incredible process. And that's where true safety is. Now, it's very easy to say that, very hard to do it in the moment. But we have, that's why we practice. That's what practice is all about. So we just keep coming back to this very important thing, that we think safety is changing the conditions. But actually, safety is to align ourselves with that which is wise within us and outside of us, and to be still and to allow it to release, to melt into the unborn. So thank you very much.